The following is a paid program.
It's time to talk UK sports with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. This is the Leach Report Radio Network. Join in the discussion by tweeting your questions to at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com. And you can call 877-904-1080. Now, along with an outstanding lineup of guests and broadcast to the most passionate fan base in America, the Big Blue Nation, here's the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach.
Welcome in to our Thursday edition of the Leach Report. And nice day today, but going to be a nasty couple of days to follow with a lot of rain and colder temperatures. And then I think it's supposed to bounce back a little bit for Easter Sunday. Happy you guys are with us as we get into an hour of UK sports conversation today. And we'll start it off with Mike Pratt talking about the Wildcats roster for next season, what it's looking like, what some of these guys are going to be looking at as they go into their NBA phase of their life. So we'll get into that with Mike. Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated as well. And a lot of talk about spring game and looking forward to the 2019 football season with him, among other things. That's our guest lineup for today as we get to the Wildcat News of the Day. It's a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group. That's private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Jamal Baker making the announcement yesterday that he has decided to transfer. Certainly can't say it came as a great shock. You see the backcourt for next season, and you, if you're Jamal, you think maybe better, more playing time somewhere else. I can certainly understand that. He struggled physically in the time that he was here to find it, but once he finally got on the court, was a productive player. Never quite knocked down shots the way that we thought that he would. I think that ability is probably there, but you know, just didn't shoot. You think from all the reports, and you watch him in practice, you think about a guy that's probably going to be about a 40% three-point shooter. Instead, he was down around 30. But I think with time, that would have come. He became, I think, a better defender than anybody thought that he would. Had some big buckets in the Wofford game and played well defensively. In fact, the two games in Jacksonville had new career highs in points. Unfortunately, had a bad moment there in the Auburn game where he got beat on a step back by Harper, which it's not the first person that's happened to, but fouled him on a three-point shot that Harper made that turned out to be a big point in the game. And then Jamal never found his way back into the game, and it was a tough break for him. But had some good moments in his time at Kentucky. We certainly wish him well. One would think he probably heads back to the West Coast, be closer to family out there, and could find a spot where he could get on the court for somebody, I would think. CBS, John Rothstein reporting that Kentucky's going to play EKU this coming season. So the schedule starts over the course of the summer to piecemeal out. We know some of the big ones, the Michigan State and the Champions Classic. They play Ohio State in the CBS Sports Classic. They'll play Utah out in Vegas. Don't know yet who they'll play in the Big 12 Challenge. But the non-conference games piecemeal out, usually the other side releasing them. EKU will be coming off a season in which it won 13, lost 18, lost its all-time leading scorer, Nick Mayo, second season under the new coach, A.W. Hamilton, from over in Georgetown. Baseball, Kentucky opens a series against Tennessee tonight. Tennessee, number 22 in the country. Everybody Kentucky plays in the SEC is ranked, it seems. 6:30's first pitch tonight. Darren Hedrick will have the call on the UK radio network. Don't know what they'll end up doing about these Friday and Saturday. They've got the game scheduled for Friday night and Saturday afternoon, but Mother Nature would seem to be playing havoc with that schedule. So I would say stay alert for a possible schedule change for the Kentucky baseball, given the weather that's coming. Softball, Louisville beat Kentucky last night 8-7. Katie Reed, Abby Cheek from the softball team drafted by the Women's Pro Fast Pitch Softball League. There's a neat story at NFL.com about Lonnie Johnson and his backstory and obstacles that he had to overcome to find his way to the University of Kentucky. And you read a story like this and you're so happy that it's worked out well for Lonnie. And you know, credit to his coaches, but also to him for taking the coaching, for working hard to get better, and putting himself in a position through his hard work that he might end up in the first round of the draft, but seems from all the projections at a good chance he could be as high as the second round and be in a position to help out his family. And neat story. It's at NFL.com on Lonnie Johnson. Links to the stories that we talk about each day can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. Kentucky Branded is our hotline sponsor here on the show, and they've got a big Easter sale that is coming up. It is a one-day sale on Saturday, the Easter one-day sale on Saturday at Kentucky Branded with a preview day on Friday. You can make your Kentucky Easter basket extra special with exclusive items from Kentucky Branded. You can save 20% too during this annual Easter one-day sale coming up this Saturday. It is Saturday only at the Kentucky Branded stores in Lexington, three of them, and also at KentuckyBranded.com. Make sure you check that out to get ready for Easter. We're heading to a break and back with Mike Pratt.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Tweet us at Leach Report or email leachreport@gmail.com.
Quarter past the top of the hour as we roll back into the show here on the Kentucky Branded Hotline is Mike Pratt. His weekly visits to the program are presented by Boone's Butcher Shop in Bartstown. You can check them out at boonesbutchershop.com. Out at Keeneland yesterday, it was a pretty day. People always dressed up, looking sharp, but nobody looked finer than Mike Pratt there in the Keeneland paddock yesterday. Good to see you.
Well, it's awful nice of you. Had people throw things at me, but that's okay. I appreciate your opinion.
Did you win any money?
No, I donated a little bit. Boy, the chalk.
Chalky day.
Tried to beat the chalk, man.
It was a brutal day for doing that. I think they had three odds-on winners in the first five races. So I think it's be a little more favorable today and tomorrow looking at the cards. But we'll get into that a little bit more, the horse racing side. We get derby time and get your derby horse. But right now we want to talk a little basketball. We'll start with Jamal Baker. That's the latest news and his decision to transfer, I said, in the first segment. Certainly didn't come as a surprise to me. I doubt it did to you, right?
No, it didn't. And, Jamal gave it a good shot. I mean, he hung around, tried. The fit just wasn't right for whatever the reason. So he decided to make a change, and I can't blame him. You want to play, and college more likely than not is your best chance to play that level of basketball because the odds of playing pro, no matter how many come through our program. But overall, it's still a long shot. So I appreciate what he did, and I would consider moving on myself if I was in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, there are times when that is the right move. Even as far back as, I remember, Joby Hall transferred out of Kentucky because he wanted to play. He went to a smaller school.
Yeah, guys sometimes have knee-jerk reactions, maybe. And they decide, coach doesn't like me. I had a bad day or a bad year, whatever it is. But Jamal, he tried couple years and just couldn't get the fit right. And so you can't blame him at all. You can't. You got to wish him nothing but the best.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the guys who have made their decisions to stay in the draft. And with PJ. We've talked a good bit about him and how the pros look at him. Let's talk about Tyler Hero and Keldon Johnson. We'll start with Keldon. As he goes into this process now, he'll be doing workouts for teams. What kinds of things do you think he'll be hearing from them?
Well, I think both these guys are potential picks. They're guys that physically aren't ready for the league right now. If you watch the playoffs and or any game, but particularly the playoffs, you see how it's not necessarily the one-on-one physicality or around the basket. It's just the way the guards play, the forwards play, the strength you have to get things done. So both those guys are potential picks that the NBA is willing to bet on, that they can either, you know, whatever the deficiencies they see in these two young fellas, they can bring them along, and that they'll be, you know, contributors. No one said they're going to be all-stars or stars. We don't know. I mean, doesn't look to me like they're AD or Carl Anthony Towns or John Wall, but, you know, they could have a, both of them could have a really nice career in the NBA if they'll listen and work hard. Both of them showed they would listen and work hard. If they continue that, Tom, then they got a chance of elevating their game to where they can be contributors.
If you're a first-round pick, I would assume you get a better chance in terms of the attention that the team pays to you, the amount of time and energy they put into developing you, as opposed to if you're, you know, second-round or free-agent guy. But is that correct?
Yeah, I would think there's more emphasis. I think that they're always looking for a second round due to salary cap situations to develop a second rounder if he is willing to work hard and spend time in the G League. And of course the first round guys go to the G League too. I mean, you know, your top five or seven aren't going to go. They're going to probably play, or at least they hope they're going to play, but even those guys go down for a little bit. But where these two guys, where people think they're going to go, I mean, NBA people I'm talking to, yeah, it's middle of the first there, you know, 18, 22. I can't see the one I'm following. If you look at who's available, neither one of them should fall below 22, I don't think. That's just one man's opinion. They've got a lot of potential in different ways, but I think they're solid picks there. And they will. They'll have. They'll get all they want as far as coaching and development at that spot. The good news for them is, you know, the time they spent in the G League, up and down between the big league and big team in the G League, is going to be important in their development. It's always important, unless they can step in on a good team, which is pretty hard to imagine. They're going to go to a playoff team, and there's not a rush for them to be a major contributor next year, I wouldn't think, depending on the team, of course. But those teams in there are pretty solid, so they're looking to bring these guys along. If somebody goes for free agency or retires or injury, they're bringing these guys along for the future.
The feeling is, I think, among fans is you look at a guy like a James Young, who got first round money, but was not able to stick in the league. And the point would be, well, he should have come back for a second year. He would have developed more and had a better shot. But if you are a first round guy and they're paying that attention to you, do you get that chance to develop in the league as you would in the second year in college? And at which point then it becomes a, you know, an easy financial decision to take the money. And really it's just about how much, you know, you're willing to work at it. In other words, will you get do you have the chance to develop just as easily once you're in the league as a rookie, as opposed to a second year in college?
Yeah. I mean, it's all in the eye of the beholder. If you want to go for the money and not bet on yourself and come back a year, if you want to go for the money, go ahead and go for it. And James, hopefully he's got money, he made the right decision, he's put some away. I think he's playing overseas now someplace, or maybe the G League, but he got money. Hopefully after taxes and all those other expenses that he's been able to save some money toward a life after basketball, and we'll see what happens. It always doesn't always work out. I mean, you've got to find the right coach, the right team that really appreciates what you do best and can overlook maybe your flaws, because everybody's got flaws. It's just a matter of finding that right fit, that right situation. And you hope you get it in the draft, right? Yeah. That's where you hope you get it. But sometimes it takes a guy to go to his second or third team before he grows physically and his game grows, and then he develops into a starter or a contributor.
Because ideally you want somebody that's drafting you to really want you, as opposed to, I always think about the story you used to tell where they're sitting around a table in a draft room trying to figure out who to pick, and finally the head coach, everybody's critical of somebody, and the head coach finally says, look, we can't pass, we have to take somebody. So want to be wanted and not just we had to take somebody.
Yeah, you really do. And it's hard sometimes because teams want to fill their needs, but maybe the one year we really wanted the kid from Michigan, Glenn Rice, when I was with the Hornets. And he was picked right in front of us by Miami, and we ended up with J.R. Reed. But we really wanted Glenn Rice, and we were dying for Glenn Rice as a staff. Now, the owner of the team then, he wanted J.R. He was happy because he thought that Carolina connection would help him. And but Glenn Rice, you know, he had a heck of a nice career and would have been a good fit with us because we needed Kelly Trepucca was playing that shooting spot, and we had Big Curry. And this kid would have fit in because Kelly was at the end of his rope, but we never got to him. And that happens sometimes. So we took what we thought was available and made the pick. And then if you're working these guys and you're coaching them and you're training them, you just hope that they have as much desire as you do, given the fact that they're making a lot of money, okay? You want that desire to be there.
We'll talk a little bit about that when we come right back. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We're chatting with Mike Pratt. It's at MikePratt22 on Twitter.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
Welcome back into the show, and on the line with us now is Eric Barland. He's the VP of Sales for the Central Region for Tito's Vodka. They've been with us here on the show for a few months now, and Eric has a group coming into Kentucky this week to show off Keeneland, right?
There's nothing like Keeneland in the spring, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
I know you told me that you guys have some partnerships with the thoroughbred industry, and Keeneland, I know you've been involved with them for a while. Where did that connection come from for Tito's?
Well, I think Tito's has always been involved in animal welfare and charities in general. And then I had great support for the equine industry just from going to the track as a kid and sort of developed a passion for it. And we were actually approached by the Breeders' Cup about 7 or 8 years ago. And then once we got involved with the TAA and everything that we've done with the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance has sort of been the focus of that whole partnership. And then, you know, the Breeders' Cup is such an international event, and, you know, we're trying to expand our sales outside of this country. So to have that European flair come in, it was just a great fit, and the people at Breeders' Cup have been tremendous to work with. And then from that, you know, some hospitality at the Kentucky Derby. We've done a lot with all kinds of different equine charities across the country, and it just kind of morphed off of that. So it's been fun. I mean, it's been a developing thing. I think that one of the things that Tito allows us to do is sort of, you know, whatever your passion in life is, and mine's always been horse racing, I kind of tried to get him turned on to it, and we've been able to tie that into charitable endeavors. And some of the handicapping stuff that goes on there as well, whether it be the NTRA or the NHC, we've done some partnerships there as well. So we're sort of trying to support the industry across all channels.
So do you have a favorite horse as in your history as a racing fan?
I would have to say, just from a gambling standpoint, you know, when you go to the Derby, there's such huge pools in the Derby, and oftentimes what we call a lot of dead money because people are, and sometimes that works out, but we had a really big score on Always Dreaming. We thought that horse was really ready a few years back. And, you know, you go to the Derby, I think this will be my 33rd in a row, and you never know when you're going to hit that race. It's a tough race to hit. The races leading up to it are tough to hit. So to really pound that horse and have the exact and see that horse just take off the board, I would say that, you know, I would say still I get chills whenever I watch the Belmont just to see Secretariat winning by 31 lengths in that call down the stretch. I would say that's the best horse that I've seen on tape, and as far as the best horse I've ever seen live, when I was at the Breeders' Cup for when it was in Lexington and American Pharoah, there were some questions about whether that horse could beat older horses, and it was coming off of there was a loss there within the season, and he just ran in a completely different way to see that horse live. He just pretty much skipped over the track. He wasn't a huge horse like, say, a Justify was, but he just glided over the track and crushed the field, and it just looked like a workout. It was effortless, and that was the best race I ever saw live.
Listen, I appreciate you jumping on with us. We have enjoyed turning hopefully some more folks on to Tito's, and I look forward to seeing your group down here at Keeneland.
All right, appreciate your support, Tom, as always, and I'll see you soon.
It's Eric Barland, so you might see some of the folks from Tito's out at Keeneland. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
It's 19 away from the top of the hour. We return to the Kentucky Branded Hotline to bring on Justin Rowland from Cats Illustrated. And we'll start with the spring game that played out last Friday night at Kroger Field. Justin, some of your takeaways from what you saw.
Yeah, I mean, when you're playing against, you know, your own teammates, there's always a give and take. But I thought the first string on both sides did what they were supposed to do. And you can't read too much into, you know, whether they have enough depth or not. I didn't think the second string secondary guys played all that great. I mean, I think Hunter and Gunnar Hoke and Terry Wilson were like 24 or 27, you know, crazy numbers. But the first string defense did really well. The first string line was dominant. And some of the skill guys, Bryce Oliver and the tight ends, were I guess, a pleasant surprise.
You know, this is a situation for so long with Kentucky where you could land some great skill players, whether it's a Craig Yeast, Keo Sanford, a Derek Abney, or you get a good quarterback, Tim Couch, Andre Woodson, et cetera. But it was hard for Kentucky to match up in the O-line and D-lines year in and year out to be able to sustain something. And now you look out there, and that's a defensive line that looks like it could match up with anybody in the SEC, led by Quentin Bohanna. And the offensive line, on Smoke's long run, the two guys pulling through the hole to lead him were Stenberg and Young, who could be playing on Sundays the next season.
Yeah, and you can look at the roster, and you can just look at them on the field, and it's a really big team. We used to say a couple years back when Dan Mullen was at Mississippi State, you know, they didn't recruit at the same level, like top 10 classes, as the top SEC schools did, but their development, their strength program, they had some huge guys, and that's where Kentucky is right now. You know, they've recruited tremendous size on both sides of the line, and the offensive line should be good once again. This could be the best defensive line Kentucky's had in a long time, and that makes everybody else on the outside look better.
They do a good job of looking at it. I think it seems to me as maybe NFL teams do in terms of looking for body types and guys, you know, projecting a guy that we can get in here and we can put 20 pounds, 30 pounds, whatever, on this guy of muscle and make him into what we need.
They've also taken some guys that might be a little bit of a project in terms of their skill development, like a Bully, a Body Fitzgerald. You know, he's at Alabama if he wasn't new to football. You know, when you're at Kentucky, you have to either dream on their growth potential or dream on their skill development, and they seem to be doing well at both of those tasks. And when you've got experienced players and you can be patient with those guys, then you're really in a good spot.
Well, Calvin Taylor's a good example on the defensive line.
Yeah, he was a post-signing day addition. He didn't have to be a major contributor right away, and they could bide their time and bring him along, and I think he's exceeded everybody's expectations.
You know, the guys on the edge of the second line of the defense, Jordan Wright had some nice plays, but, you know, he's got to prove it yet. Boogie Watson needs to be able to handle more on his plate, but the guy – inside, the two inside backer positions and the front, that's is probably going to be as strong as Kentucky's been in a long time, right?
Yeah. You know, Cash Daniel, Chris Oates, DeAndre Square. My question has been, with two guys that are as good a prospects as Chris Oates and DeAndre Square are, it's kind of unfortunate that they're both, you know, jockeying for the same position because they can't both play all the time. They both did some good things in the spring game. I think Chris Oates had 7 tackles. It was a quiet 7 tackles. That was the second most on the team. And he was making tackles at every level of the defense, on receivers, on running backs. And, they're set at that spot for years to come.
Let's go to the offensive side. How do you think the quarterbacks looked?
I thought they did exactly what they should have done. You know, I don't know how much we can read into it, because those second-string DBs were clearly outmatched, I thought, by the first-string receivers, who I thought played really well, Epps, Ali, and some of the others. But they made the throws. I thought Terry Wilson's deep ball accuracy was on point. That's one of the things he needed to improve on. He had all day to throw, so that helped. But yeah, and with Gunnar Hoke, what he did in the second half when he was with the ones, I think, cast a different light on what he did in the first half with the twos, because that made all the difference.
Do you think Hoke stays?
I mean, that's an interesting question. You know, I hate speculating on it because it seems like people around him always insist, you know, he didn't ask for the topic, but it's inevitable. Kentucky would really be in a bind if he doesn't stay, and I think that what situation is going to be better than second string, real possibility of playing in the SEC? I still think it's a pretty good situation.
Well, I do too, because you could still always go and play 1 year somewhere else. All you need is one good year if you want to try to move on to the next level. And we've seen other guys do that. If you go now, you generally, I think it's you're best to transfer at the end of the at the end of December and be able to go through a spring practice at the new place. Now, if there's a need somewhere that you end up filling, maybe you're fine. But you kind of go in behind if you've missed spring practice somewhere else.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. There's no sense of urgency, and we've talked about this before, how often teams go to their second, even their third-string quarterback, and it's easy to forget that, it's even within the realm of possibility. I don't think it's likely, but it's within the realm of possibility that Wilson struggles this year and they have to go to a second quarterback.
True.
So a lot of
things
can happen.
Do you think, how do you think the offense, just in terms of style, calls, etc., changes in the post-Benny Snell era?
Well, I think a lot of it is going to depend on the protection. I think the protection, even though the line lost two really good players on the right side, I think the tackle play could really be outstanding. And if that's the case, then the passing game is something they could feel a whole lot more comfortable with. And then you've got, I think the tight ends as a group are going to be a really good receiving group, maybe not as good blocking. There's signs that some of the young receivers are stepping up. I think it's not going to be 50-50, I don't think, but I think it's going to be closer to that, and we should know pretty early in the season.
We didn't see Upshaw in the spring game, but he's a guy they seem very high on at the tight end position.
Yeah. And I think what people who haven't been around him don't realize is they think hybrid, he's a skinny guy. He's a built guy. He's bigger than a lot of people realize, and he's a great athlete. And I'll add Brendan Bates. Kind of often cast as like a throwback conventional tight end. I thought he looked really quick on his feet in his one play, which should have been a touchdown in the spring game.
Bryce Oliver turned a lot of heads with his play. From having watched him coming into Kentucky as a high school player, was this the kind of play you thought you would see out of him?
Not a whole lot was known about this guy. I mean, he was a later addition. It was one of those situations, I'm trying to jog my memory. I think to get to him, they had to miss on a couple of other targets. And, that's worked out for them in the past in some cases, certainly.
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen would come to mind. But he played down in Florida, high level of football. They liked those guys, tons of skill guys down there. But, yeah, I didn't think that he was one of the better players in the class when he signed. So I think he's definitely been a surprise based on recently.
From what you saw in the spring game, anybody catch your eye that was unexpected or better than you thought they would be?
I will say that Josh Ali and Isaiah Epps, not a lot of people are talking about them, but I thought that they were really aggressive getting in and out of their breaks, really confident running their routes. I thought they attacked the ball better than they did. That's something they didn't do in the vertical game last year, attack the ball, and I thought that they did that better this year, and I think that their experience and maturity showed up, and that would certainly be a key for the offense this year.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that ability to take coaching and to really become a better technician at your position. We saw how significant that can be with Josh Allen last season, who was solid as a junior and then took that to spectacular last year when he became so good technically as well as athletically.
Yep, absolutely. And, those guys, they were like three-star recruits. They were middling Power 5 level recruits. You don't generally want guys like that to be playing as true freshmen and not all that much as true sophomores. They were kind of thrust in because of the previous issues at receiver. It might be kind of a post-hype situation where people forget about them a little bit, but they're going to have so many opportunities with the losses from last year.
We're talking with Justin Rowland. It's at Rowland Rivals on Twitter, catsillustrated.com. We'll take a break and come back and continue the discussion after this time out on the Leach Report Radio Network. WildcatsIllustrated.com. There's a story up, the lead story on the site right now is by Justin about Kerry Blackshear, the player that's transferring from Virginia Tech. Or he's put his name into the transfer portal, I will say. He's also, I guess, put his name up for the NBA draft as well. If Kentucky could land him, what would that fit look like?
I think it would. It's important. You know, they need to get probably another big guy just to feel better about the situation. And he was – it's tough to tell how he translates at Kentucky because he was excellent as a post-up scorer last year. But a lot of that was Virginia Tech's space the floor so well. And they kind of put him in a position to succeed. And, you know, Kentucky's going to be talented, but we don't know how the spacing is going to be with his shooting. But I think he would certainly be a great addition. I mean, his numbers overall were basically like P.J. Washington's. I don't think he's as good as P.J., but, you know, certainly good.
Kentucky's going to, I mean, Cal always maintained this was a great three-point shooting team, and, you know, numbers-wise, they were matched up well with his others, but it just didn't feel like it. Certainly the postseason, they didn't shoot it well from three, but at the moment, depending on how the roster shakes out, but at the moment, it would look to be a situation where they're going to need to be a good three-point shooting team, maybe along the lines of, you know, how his second team was more, a little more perimeter oriented.
Yeah, a lot of it is going to depend on, you know, Tyrese Maxey. I mean, if he can be a Brandon Knight kind of shooter, then that's going to carry him a long way. And I think, you know, when people are angsting over the shooting on next year's team, which I think is fair, I mean, I think he's going to be really good. I think he's going to be better than a lot of people realize. But the shooting is definitely a question mark. That's not to say it's going to be bad, but, you know, it's just totally unpredictable.
And quickly, certainly is a guy that I could see him being a high 30% three-point shooter.
Yep, you would think so. And he's confident. He is a willing shooter. Hagans is, you know, you can't count on him being that guy, but I'm sure he's going to improve. I don't think his shot is necessarily broken by any stretch of the imagination. You know, it's but they really need the shooting to keep the court open for the slashers that they're going to have for sure.
Let's get back to a little football side and recruiting. There was a wide receiver that had committed to Michigan that visited and then immediately decommitted. What are you hearing there?
Yeah, he. I thought when I first heard that, you know,
he's,
I mean,
like I said, he's from Michigan. He's from Ohio, right?
What was that?
I think I said he's from Michigan. He's from Ohio. Had committed to Michigan.
He's from Ohio, and his name escapes me. It's like Branham or Granham or something like that. But he's he's a three-star, high three-star kid, skill position player, and he told me that he had a great time his visit to Kentucky. Michigan insiders don't think that he was pushed out. They don't have a lot of commits at that position, at those positions, and they wanted him. So he's a high-quality kid. I don't know if he's going to make a decision anytime soon, but it sounds like Kentucky's going to be on his short list for sure.
What about Bo Allen? He took in the spring game for Kentucky.
Yeah, Bo told me recently that he's shooting for a decision within the next month, so that would put him around mid-May. And, you know, this weekend he's going to take an official to Washington State. It's going to be his third trip to Pullman, which for a Kentucky kid says something about your interest. He likes the offense. He likes the people there. He's going to take an official to Kentucky next weekend, and he might visit West Virginia, but it's really winding down. I think he's going to end up at Kentucky, but Washington State is the one that I don't think you can write off yet.
Yeah, they'll certainly show him a lot of you know, things that numbers that you can put up, but there's a strong family connection certainly working in Kentucky's favor, his dad being a former player.
They've recruited him for a really long time. He's been around the camp since before he was a freshman, or around when he was a freshman in high school, and they've done everything they can. I think if he were to go somewhere else, it would just be because they've stumbled into these running quarterback situations. But I've never gotten the impression that that's the trump card for him.
Big offensive lineman from Louisville's getting close to decision time. John Young, what are you hearing there?
Yeah, I think Kentucky is probably going to be where he ends up, and that would be very big. He's got a long history with Kentucky. He's visited a lot. He really buys into what Schlarman and Stoops do with their offensive linemen. I think he's basically been like a recruiter for Kentucky on recent visits already. And I think they survived his trip to Georgia. Georgia made a really strong push. Kirby Smart didn't leave his side pretty much the entire day when he was in Athens, so he's a big-time kid. And I'm very confident Kentucky's going to get him.
Justin, appreciate the time as always. We'll talk next week.
Thanks a lot.
You can follow all the countdown to some of these recruiting decisions at catsillustrated.com. Time for our Donato slice of Wildcat history. This day in 1995 was the day that Ron Mercer committed to play for the Wildcats. Worked out pretty well for both sides. Birthdays, Derek Miller, former sharpshooter, only Kentucky player that has scored 40 in a game in Rupp Arena, celebrating a birthday today. Michael Bradley, celebrating a birthday today. And our buddy Doug Flynn, happy birthday to the former Kentucky freshman basketball player and member of the Big Red Machine. We'll see you tomorrow.
Check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here on the Leach Report Radio Network.